A very good day to you all. We are back here with Eye on La Liga, brought to you by Marca in English. I am your host, as nearly always, Ollie Wilson, and we intend to go through all of the twists and turns of the La Liga season and another great La Liga weekend of action to get our teeth into. We might go back as well. Well, I know for a fact that we are going to go back and have a look at what happened in the Champions League as well. It was all right on the night in the end for Real Madrid. It wasn't too good for Barcelona and their trip to Paris. Amazing. Around about Valentine's Day and you can't get a decent trip to Paris. Unbelievable. Joining me to talk through all of the action, two of Marca's finest on the podcast as always. First and foremost, Mr. Jason Pettigrove. Jason, how are you doing, mate?
I'm very well, thank you, Ollie. How are you?
I'm not too bad, not too bad. Pleasure to hear your voice, as always. The other man joining us on the show is the man who filled in a couple of weeks ago for myself and hasn't quite yet decided to kick me straight out of the hosting seat once more. Mark Mayo joining us on the show once again. Mark, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, thanks, mate. I'm still formulating the official plans of my coup before the takeover happens.
Got that little taste of the power and he can't get enough. It's a privileged spot to be in, I have to say, especially when you get to talk to gentlemen like yourself and try at least to dictate some sort of part in the conversation. But I'm going to leave a lot of it to you guys today because I know you both will have some very strong opinions about what happened last week in Paris for Barcelona. I don't think anybody really predicted a such a meltdown. L'Equipe giving Lionel Messi a 2 out of 10 rating for his performance in Paris as Barcelona were beaten 4-0 by a PSG side that really were dominant. At Barca, you never really felt got a strong foothold in that game at all. And Paris Saint-Germain, they kept the ball well. They were clinical in front of goal. They created plenty of chances. Plenty of people saying there was only one player on the pitch that showed up for Barcelona that night, and that was Neymar. Jason, it's caused a massive shockwave around the Catalan club, this result, because when we've had a pop at Barca this season, we've said they've only got one style, there's no plan B. They've at least still bounced back and replied a lot of the time. This result, though, I mean, can they really come back from this? Not only in the tie itself, but this seems like the straw that breaks the camel's back for Luis Enrique, because there are plenty now, far more than there were before, calling for him to be done and dusted at the club. And even he's had to say, look, don't blew the players boo me in the last few days as well to try and take some of the pressure off his team who performed so poorly in Paris a week ago.
Yeah, I think what it's done, it's probably underscored everything that's been wrong at the club but that's been sort of kept under wraps. Obviously there's been a lot of us journalists and, you know, the wider public have been, you know, sort of whispering about, you know, what's going on behind the scenes. Something's clearly not right. What's interesting is that performance came on the back of a 6-0 hammering at Alavés, which I believe is Alavés's heaviest ever defeat in the Liga. And I mean, you know, Alavés are no mugs, let's be honest. But I think, you know, the manner of that defeat against PSG, it's probably hastened Luis Enrique's departure, I think. In my mind, there's not too much doubt that he was going to go at the end of the season anyway. But I think if there was going to be people saying, oh, you know, he could stay on for maybe another year to see how it goes, after that performance and then subsequently the performance against Leganés at the weekend, you know, things are seriously wrong there. The players look disinterested almost. And, I think we can sort of take a lot from Lionel Messi's non-celebration for his penalty.
You say it kind of underscores the problems that Barca have had this season, but do you not think it actually even opened up and showed a few more? Because there hasn't been a too much discussion about complete disjointedness in this side. And it was a team that night that couldn't pass to each other or get a foothold in the game at all. Normally, when Barca play badly, we're at least used to some sort of spell, a late flurry, some sort of comeback right at the death and a way to do it. Is that just because they don't face this sort of quality opposition in Spain when they do have these iffy moments? I mean, you cast your mind back to Villarreal, the stumbles in the Copa del Rey as well, that which they've had, particularly the 1-0 draw against Hercules, even though it was pretty much the B team that was played against them in their last game of 2016. But when you go back to those performances, there's always at least a moment where Barca looked like Barca. They never looked like Barca against PSG.
I think in those games what you had was a midfield that was still sort of working relatively hard and, you know, being the bridge between the defence and the attack. What we saw against PSG was a midfield that frankly wasn't there, which, you know, when you consider we had Busquets and Iniesta within that, I mean, it was shocking, really. Andre Gomez is never going to be a Barcelona player for me, but I think it's unfair to pin all the blame on him. But I think, I can't remember actually which PSG player came out and said it post-match, but one of the comments was that, you know, he ran for 40 yards unchallenged. And I think this is what you're getting at the moment with Barcelona, is that you're getting MSN that are having to almost do a lot of the work. And what that means is Messi's having to drop back further than he'd like, something that he said will form part of his contract discussions, in fact, that he wants to see someone being brought in midfield that is world-class, that allows him to then move sort of further up the pitch, which is where he can do the most damage. And until that happens, that, you know, so that's what's going to make him sign or not, effectively. I still think he will sign, but that's, I guess, what he's saying.
Doesn't Messi drop back anyway? We're used to seeing that front three of Barcelona going way back to the Pep days, of course, even with Ibrahimovic, Eto, Henri, Messi, that's combination, that one of those trios, really. They still defended from the front and still dropped back and did the hard graft as well and came back to, you know, midfield and further to get the job done. Why is it now a problem now for Messi?
But he's been clear, because he's not getting any younger, that he wants to do his work in the part of the field where he should be, i.e. further up. He doesn't want to feel the need to be the saviour, as it were, and keep having to come back and recycle the possession much further back, which then dilutes his influence further up, which, you know, they say, if you've got a midfield that is just going to let teams run at you, it's gone before you even started the game. The fact that PSG scored four, it could have been six or seven.
Can you genuinely base a team around that sort of idea of we have to let Messi be where he wants to be? As he gets older, of course, you have to, you know, somebody like, for instance, Dimitar Berbatov, who never used to really run around the pitch at all but would still make things happen. Of course, Lionel Messi has that similar ability to not really move too far and stray from one spot, if you will. I'm not suggesting he wouldn't move about a fair bit or anything like that at all, but he would still have that ability to make an impact on a game and be obviously tremendously useful for any club. But considering the style of football that Barcelona play, you can't really afford to have a player that's not willing to do that tracking back at whatever age there is. I mean, this just highlights.
But when they're a player that's that important, I mean, it's like sort of saying, you know, put Karim Benzema on the right wing. He's obviously going to be less influential for Real Madrid as he would be as a centre forward. So I think, you know, if Messi feels that he can play a much better role, a much more influential role, in a sort of a wide left position rather than what is essentially now becoming a sort of a right midfield, because he's got to come back and really do a Gomez role essentially at the moment. You know, no, you shouldn't sort of base things around one particular player. However, as a coach, as a manager, your aim is to get the best out of the team. And if that is part of, you know, the overall thing that Messi wants to play up there and feels that's where he's best utilised, then it's got to be looked at, surely.
I would say that it's kind of a natural disbalance that occurs in the MSN, because Neymar can't really drop that deep because he'll just get shoved off the ball. He's not got the physique to come deep. Mm-hmm. Whereas Luis Suarez is obviously a penalty box striker. He does all his work there and he's a finisher as opposed to a link man. So if Messi wants to be a similar sort of striker to Suarez, then he needs the midfield to do even more, because the two men around him in the attack aren't going to cover those sort of, they're not going to tick those boxes, as it were. So he needs players in the midfield who are going to cover a multitude of jobs. They're going to have to run hard, they're going to have to play him in, they're going to have to link up with him, they're going to have to win tackles. It's a high bar that Messi's set, but it's sort of the culture of Barcelona that they can't tell him, no, we're not going to provide that for you, or no, you're wrong, obviously.
But it's a precedent that's been set, isn't it? Because the number of players that you've heard kind of say after they've left a club, after they've left Barcelona, say, you know, a lot of it is based around Lionel Messi. You know, if Messi has a really tight hold on some of the coaching decisions that get made. That precedent has been set so early now, it's very difficult to stray away from it, especially when he is put on that pedestal. You know, he is so important. When Messi doesn't play and Barca stumble, everybody immediately just says it's because there was no Lionel Messi. It's never because of something else. The initial reaction is no, Messi was there. And if he comes back and they start winning again, it's fine. It's when he's been out for lengthy periods and they've actually carried on winning that you realise that this team can still play and beat the majority of its opponents without Lionel Messi. But we almost forget that when we get into a situation like this.
It may be the club have to strip it right back and actually, you know, look at it from a position of, should we even look at changing the formation? Should we step away from almost the identity that's been there since Cruyff and actually do something different? And I mean, you know, they're talking about potential new coaches coming in, one of whom is Jorge Sampaoli. And, you know, he'd be the sort of person that would come in and actually probably wouldn't stick rigidly to what Barca have done all these years. He'd mix it up a bit because that's the way he likes to play. You know, maybe that's the answer.
There's got to be some sort of answer, because it can't just be one problem that's solved by Messi staying a little bit further forward and everybody else upping their game. I think, to be honest, the trouble is as well is that Messi came into a very privileged position in that Barca side. Not only a Barca privileged to have him, but he was very privileged to come into a Barca side which was, you know, Iniesta, Busquets and Xavi. I mean, having Iniesta and Xavi at the peak of their powers alongside Busquets in the middle three, there's not going to be a better midfield three in terms of the quality and the chemistry and the balance that those three provide each other in a midfield three, especially when you've got hard workers on the flanks and a goal scorer such as an Eto'o or an Ibrahimovic down the centre of the field. As over time it's become more based around Lionel Messi, that's great. You base it around your strongest asset, arguably, and quite clearly really is Lionel Messi over the last few years. But now he's not getting that same support because that midfield three isn't as well balanced. It doesn't mean that, oh, I've got to do less and they've got to up their game more with Lionel Messi. I'd like to see him say, okay, look, maybe we need to shuffle some things around. Yeah, we need to bring in some more talent, obviously. You know, the fact that Denis Suarez, he's not going to take over that mantle of Iniesta or Xavi straight away, is he? He's got to learn that trade. Andre Gomez, at the same way. You can bring any player from outside Barca and they have to adjust to that style, that tempo that is the Barcelona mentality that is ingrained not only in this senior team, but throughout the whole Barcelona coaching system. It's going to take time to get to it. But Lionel Messi can't then say, well, everybody's got to up their game. I don't want to do as much as I get older. I've carried this side. It's almost what we'd expect from somebody like Cristiano Ronaldo at that point when we hear things like this. I mean, I might be being over the top here and overly critical of Messi in this way. And I don't want to say that it was all down to Messi's laziness or anything like that. I mean, Neymar was arguably the only player that showed up for Barcelona against PSG. But they weren't that convincing on the weekend either, this Barca side. And some of it comes down to Luis Enrique. But I think some of it is that off-field politics, as we're almost seeing from the comments, Mark, that we've heard from Dani Alves in the last few hours.
Yeah, I mean, Dani Alves kind of coming out and saying that he was being told that he was leaving 3 years before he was actually leaving, and he signed his new contract deliberately with a termination clause in it to mean that he would get away. And it's kind of surprising hearing that from Dani Alves, who was such a linchpin in that Pep Guardiola team, the success that it had. But it all comes back to the same thing, and it all comes back to the fact that I don't think the Messi thing is necessarily a problem for now. It's a problem for the future, because if a new coach comes in, then he's going to have to deal with the hierarchy and everything that's been doing the Alves stuff. He's going to have to deal with the players such as Messi and Pique, who are occasionally unhappy, what have you. And he's at some point, somewhere, either it's just going to click and be perfect, or some plasters are going to have to be pulled off, and they're going to say, right, well, Messi, you're doing this and I don't care if you're unhappy, or such and such. We saw it with Rafa Benitez and people like Andre Villas-Boas went into Chelsea, that these dressing rooms they kind of took on unsuccessfully, and also Zinedine Zidane went in and took the Real Madrid dressing room on positively. So it's more a question for the future, and these comments from Alves must be worrying for Barcelona.
I'm just going to quickly say, with Alves, I disagree. That I think, you know, he's always been a straight talker, so I don't see that as a surprise at all. I mean, perhaps unnecessary that he's had to come out and say them since he's been gone for a while, but I mean, that he's just Dani Alves, and I think the Barcelona public sort of love him for it. I'm just going to go back.
Surprising, Rolly. The timing of it.
If it was someone else, yes, it would be surprising, but not surprising because it's him.
Okay.
I mean, he's the guy that sort of he's at press conferences and stuff. He, you know, look you in the eye, and you know, he's a straight down the middle type of player. Just one last comment on the Messi thing. Sorry. I think it depends which coach comes in. He's already put his sort of weight behind Sampaoli. And I think if he comes in, not to say it'll be an old pals act, but I think we'll get the best Messi. If it's someone else that comes in that's a sort of yes man and more of a, like a Barcelona club man, if I can put it like that, then, you know, maybe there's sort of issues that come up over the next few months.
I mean, is that, I guess, is the question is then in going into the future. And obviously, Sampaoli's name has been mentioned a number of times in the last month, very heavily linked with this Barcelona job now. I mean, is it something he'd be interested in? Because he's only just gone to Sevilla. Look what he's doing with that club as well. There's such an exciting side to watch. We've been singing their praises all season and their success in the Champions League this year under him as well. But is that something that he'd be interested in? Because, you know, he'd be walking out on a club after just 1 year, but you would be then taking, you know, arguably the top job in Spanish football.
Yeah, he is interested. I've spoken to his agent twice. Barcelona are playing it very coy at the moment, as is he. But he is interested, and if they come calling, he will take the job. And he's got a very low buyout clause as well, which is quite attractive to Barcelona.
He did only sign a two-year contract as well, which I think was very deliberate when he came to Spain. This was a stepping stone job.
Might have to just re-say all of that, because I heard a big thud as Jason just name-dropped there, and it may have messed up with the audio slightly. So you've spoken to Sampaoli's agent, and he said that, yeah, it would be something he's very much interested in if they came knocking on the door. So how likely is it then, considering all the links that we've got, considering we've got that information as well now, Jace? I mean, Barca, when do they start knocking on his door? Because it seems like now this is one of these stories that's already been talked up so much that it's just inevitability that it will happen, especially the way Luis Enrique is kind of treating this as well, saying, boo me, don't boo the players, in that, look, it is my fault. Almost, you know, I'm getting out of the way soon, don't worry about it.
Yeah. Well, I think if it's down to Luis Enrique, he wants his assistant to take charge. I believe at one point that may have been an option, although from what I've been hearing, that may not now be the case, that the club might not pursue that avenue. Ernesto Valverde is a name that keeps coming up. He's come up the last two times that Barca have been looking for a new coach. So he's in the mix. Pochettino, I think, has been mentioned, but obviously there's, you know, issues there with Espanyol. So I think, you know,
would that be an issue?
It's hard.
I mean, somebody mentioned this the other day in the UK about Pochettino, and obviously being a former Espanyol player, etc., and his history with the club. Would that be that big an issue? I mean, Espanyol aren't, I know it's a local derby, local rivalry, but they're not the real competition for Barcelona in any way, shape or form. So Pochettino's previous involvement?
It shouldn't be an issue, because obviously Luis Enrique at one time was a Real Madrid player. So, no, it shouldn't be an issue, but, you know, Barcelona need to go for the best man for the job. If that's Sampaoli, he's going to come in and want to put his own stamp on the team. It's going to be something very much different to what Barcelona are used to. So that could be, you know, why things haven't moved on a pace to this point. But, you know, he has Messi's backing. I think we know he's got Neymar's backing as well. Whether the club want to make their decision based not on what the players say, I think that's probably the wrong way to go about things. If a coach comes in who's qualified for the job and as a bonus has the players backing already and their respect, then surely, you know, that's something to have real consideration for when making your decision.
Well, we've maybe not fixed the Barcelona crisis in any way, shape or form, but plenty of information on it. We'll take a very quick break, clear our minds of the blue and red, and when we come back, we'll talk about all things Los Blancos. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have a look at the league leaders, Real Madrid, and their weekend, and of course, Gareth Bale's return as well.
Dancing in the sand.
Back with a bang, back with a goal. And I'm not talking about, of course, after the break from the podcast, Eye on La Liga. I'm talking about Gareth Bale. An excellent 2-0 victory for Real Madrid against Espanyol. And really, for Zinedine Zidane, as Real Madrid's Champions League business continues, and obviously getting the win against Napoli last week, this is just another nice positive, really, for the French manager, getting Gareth Bale back and maybe just irking Cristiano Ronaldo slightly, shall we say, that Bale is back. I don't know. I'd like to know, Mark, what you think about this. The relationship between Bale and Ronaldo was always one that was up to plenty of speculation when Bale initially went to Real Madrid, of course, highest transfer fee in the world at that point, and some people suggested that Ronaldo was slightly jealous about that, didn't want Bale perhaps taking some of his thunder, which we all know Ronaldo hates it when people get on the score sheet and he doesn't. And for Zinedine Zidane to come out and call Gareth Bale very special, it's something that Ronaldo could easily just get a bee in his bonnet with, as we know he does in these sorts of situations.
Yeah, we've seen it happen occasionally before. And the problem is that Cristiano Ronaldo's body language is typically pretty terrible. It's really easy to read, isn't it? If he misses a chance and it rebounded, I think it to Benzema in the last Palmas game right at the start of the season, he was quite annoyed that the chance had gone into the net, not via his boot, as it were. So he doesn't do himself any favours in that respect. But at the same time, I do think that there's been a certain maturation over the last season under Zidane of Ronaldo. The fact, obviously, he's 32 now, so he's changing his game in ways. He's being rotated out of the side, which is quite important. We haven't seen that really before with Ronaldo, and certainly it wasn't the case under Benitez. So I do think that their relationship will be okay, so long as Ronaldo isn't completely shoved out the limelight. He wants a bit of it, but also the fact that Real Madrid were on the verge of winning La Liga, I think, will go a long way to solving that.
There's no one like him, apparently, according to Zidane. Sorry, Jason, continue.
Now, I was going to say, I wonder if it's just purely, and it's, you know, very basic, but just the fact that he hasn't scored, because there was a piece I read over the weekend that actually Ronaldo recently has had more dribbles per game, more completed dribbles per game, but I think on the weekend he didn't have a shot on goal. You know, obviously there was that great bit of skill, the sort of Elastico nutmeg. But, you know, maybe a lot of what it's about for him is the adulation of scoring. And I know that's one very, very tiny element. But obviously Bale's come on, got his goal within 15 minutes. Bale's back, as you said. Then, you know, the praising from Zidane. A little bit sort of childish and silly from my point of view, that if you're going to be a bit jealous and not celebrating as well. I think that was the other thing. I think everybody else was celebrating bar Ronaldo, which, as Mark said, has happened before. You know, could it be something like that? Once he gets a goal, you know, he feels happier, feels better, he's back to the old Ronaldo. I don't know.
Well, it's what makes him so special and so determined as a player on the pitch, isn't it, with Cristiano Ronaldo? You know, he wants to do absolutely everything. There was a point this season in one of the earlier games in the campaign for them where I think a ball dropped to Morata and Morata turned it in for the game-winning goal. But because Ronaldo was almost frustrated it wasn't squared to him and went to Morata instead, it looked like he was actually appealing for offside against his own player to have the goal ruled out, which was, you know, baffled myself completely when you see that. But, you know, it's that living on the edge almost that makes Ronaldo so great. I mean, Real Madrid, a phenomenal side this season, with or without Cristiano. There is now rotation. There always has been rotation this season. Zidane still is able to balance it. Having Bale back, though, just adds another ball, if you will, to be juggled by Zidane. It's going to be very difficult, although I suppose if they stay in the Champions League, there's still plenty of games in the season to get everybody game time. But it is going to be difficult to juggle all of these players now, particularly in that area of the pitch.
I think so, and the players that are going to be most frustrated by that are going to be Isco and James Rodriguez, as we've seen before, that those are the two players that have been sort of the world-class stars of their team before, be it Malaga or Monaco or Porto, and they've all come to Real Madrid thinking this is their step into the massive time that Ronaldo and Bale are enjoying, and yet they're stuck on the bench against Espanyol, or Isco starts and then James Rodriguez starts against Napoli, and it's that inconsistency for them that I think will cause the sort of murmurings of discontent around Madrid.
And there have been some with Isco, haven't there? He's hinted over the weekend that perhaps a departure from Real Madrid might be necessary. For somebody like him, though, where does he go? Because you imagine when he has played and had a bit of form, and Mark, you've suggested this in the podcast throughout this season, that we've seen when he's had maybe five games or so in a row, he's started to look back to not perhaps his very best, but he's looked like the Isco that we want to see and expect. And that'll demand quite a hefty price tag, because he's still a very, very good midfielder.
Yeah, and I think that would be the kind of obstacle to him leaving, in effect, is that if a team like Spurs and Arsenal, all the usual teams that get linked with these kind of players, will want him, if they really, really want him, then they might have to fork out, you know, upwards of 50 million quid, which isn't an insignificant amount of money, even in this day and age. And that's the fact that there's that coupled with his contract running out in 2018 will kind of be the main players, I think, as opposed to whether Real Madrid really want to sell him.
So what I was going to say, in terms of the rotation you mentioned, Ollie, last two games, Zidane's used 19 of his 24 players over those two games, and he's already come out and said he's going to do exactly the same in the next two against Valencia and Villarreal. And I think where he's managed to keep people, or most people, happy so far, and again, there's an article about this on Marker in English, is that he's just been up front with everybody, been truthful. Plain and simple, you know, explain to everybody they're going to get minutes. It might not be, in some cases, like Isco, like James Rodriguez, it won't be the amount of minutes they want, but this is how it's going to be. And, you know, he wants everybody on side. And, you know, it's worked to this point, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, 100%. I mean, four straight wins now in the last four games in all competitions, five in six, and aside from the slip-up against Sevilla and the loss against Celta Vigo and the Copa del Rey, all things going very smoothly indeed for Zinedine Zidane. The difference is, how is Zidane able to get this Real Madrid side to buy into that sort of rotation when Luis Enrique doesn't rotate too often unless he has to, and he's had to a lot this season because of injury, rather than it being his decision to rotate? But you just don't get the feeling that Barcelona players would buy into this sort of rotation style that Zidane is able to work at Real Madrid. I mean, is that in part because you almost know that that front three would never get rotated, as we saw last season, and it would everybody else would have to, you know, take their share away from the field, whereas that front three, if they're healthy, they're playing. Whereas at Real Madrid, you get the feeling that, especially now, you know, he's got Bale back, he could drop Cristiano Ronaldo. Ronaldo wouldn't like it at all, but you get the feeling that everybody else would buy into his reason of rotating and be okay with Cristiano Ronaldo perhaps starting on the bench or something like that, especially if he's not quite unfit, if he's a little tired or got a slight knock. It would seem reasonable for Zidane to do it, whereas Luis Enrique, you wouldn't catch a break at all if he dropped one of his big three.
I was just thinking, I can't think of any Real Madrid manager almost in my lifetime of watching football that would be able to do, or did do, what Zidane has done at Real Madrid in terms of everyone buying into this rotation policy. And relating it to Luis Enrique, I think the sort of sum of the parts of it is that the results are there on the pitch. And if he's only lost one La Liga game this season, they're top of the league with two games in hand, 1 point. And if they weren't top of the league, if they were third, then I don't think anyone would buy into it. But while they're winning, while they're doing well across pretty much all the competitions they've been in under Zidane, then players have to buy into it because the results are there on the pitch.
Yeah, I was going to agree with that, and also say, as sort of as a matter of respect as well, I mean, one of the best players ever to have played the game.
Yeah.
And I mean, that gives you kudos as soon as you walk into a dressing room. The fact that he's managed to allay that to the standard of play and the results that his teams have had, and obviously winning the Champions League. I mean, you've got to buy into that because he's built himself up from that point of never having coached a top side to coming in and, you know, losing the two games in however many, you know, a year or whatever it is. I mean, it's sensational.
And he is the kind of guy that you know not to mess with, because if you step out of line at half time, you don't want to be the next Materazzi to Zidane, do you really? I kind of say with the results on the pitch, I understand what you're saying by that in terms of results on the pitch perhaps reflect it for Real Madrid, whereas Luis Enrique perhaps he wouldn't get away with it because of this season. But it still baffles me slightly, and maybe it's just because, you know, the bar is so high at Barcelona. But you go back to the Alaves loss in September. That was a goalkeeping error, nothing really more than that. Caught out in an incredible game of football against Celta Vigo, but those are the only two losses this season. They've had a sluggish patch, but they've still scored in every single La Liga game this season, aside from the draw against Malaga. The results are still there for Barca. I mean, if Real draw a couple of games, the title race is right back on then. It just seems there is such an oozing confidence and dominating presence that Zidane seems to have. I don't know if it's because he's just got that almost steely glare always. He looks incredibly focused, and I think, as I say, I personally would fear looking at him, whereas Luis Enrique hasn't got that same presence in and around even the technical area. You know, if Zidane went up to a fourth official, you could imagine a fourth official carrying away. Luis Enrique at this moment, perhaps because of almost the criticism he's faced throughout this season and last season as well, with the lack of rotation in that front three, you don't get that same domineering effect at all with him. It's just an interesting one to pick up on. Real Madrid then, of course, still top of La Liga. Very good in the Champions League, guys, against Napoli. I mean, they'll be through. Are either of these two, before we go ahead and look to the Champions League games coming up this week, are either of these two going to be troubled too much by the second legs? Barca that are out, are we saying, and Real Madrid are definitely going to be through against Napoli?
Barcelona are out, no two ways about it. I can see them winning the game, but they won't win the tie. Real Madrid, you know, might find it difficult if Napoli score early, but I don't see them not scoring away, so I think that one's done and dusted as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. Both of the away teams in question will score, and that will kill the tie.
Wow. I mean, if anybody's going to turn it around, Barcelona are the team to turn it around at the end of the day, and Paris Saint-Germain under Unai Emery, going back to the Camp Nou, where he doesn't have much success at all in his managerial career, just might be worth flinging a fiver on that one. But anyway, let's move away. When we come back, let's look at the battle of the bottom, and let's look as well at Valencia. You just don't know what you're going to get with Voro's Valencia side. An excellent win on the weekend, but why is there no consistency in this team? All that and more when we return here on Eye of the Liga. Gentlemen, because we spent way too much time on the big two from Spanish football. We need to look at Atletico Madrid going into the Champions League. We need to look at Sevilla as well, as they get to take on Leicester City in midweek. We also need to look at the battle of the bottom here on Eye on La Liga. Remember, you can get in contact with us at Marker in English, at Marker in English on Twitter. Fire any questions you've got for either Mark, Jason, or anybody else on the show via Twitter there. Get on Facebook as well, Marker in English, to type in Marker in English. And, of course, www.marker.com/EN to catch all of Jason's, Mark's, and everybody else's superb writing on the beautiful game from Spain. Let's take a look at the battle at the bottom then, gentlemen, because we were saying a few weeks ago, and it really was just, 3 weeks ago, that this was done and dusted. Nobody was going to be getting out of this bottom three. Suddenly some big results in the last few weeks, and I believe it was you, Mark, didn't you say that you thought Deportivo just didn't have enough to stay out of this fight at all, and slowly they keep on slipping down, now just 3 points off the bottom three. Leganes just 2 points above Sporting, and Granada on 16 points. Osasuna, despite improved performances, should we say, over the last few weeks, unable to turn draws into victories, and still down there on 10 points. Valencia with a big win, as I say, on the weekend, just getting themselves up onto 23, and surely too far clear now to get caught into it. But the bottom three has become a bottom five, gentlemen.
Yeah, I'd say so. It's kind of like it's incredible in a sense how you had Sporting Gijón and Granada were so cut off, and you thought, well, if they pick up a few wins, at the very least Deportivo or Leganes will get some, but Deportivo lost their last three, Leganes have lost their last four. Osasuna, I mean, the risk of that being wrong, they're out of it now, basically. Granada Granada have turned their home form around off the back of some loan signings, and Sporting Gijón grabbed that win away at Leganes. So it's it's those two are the ones that are troubling the two above them all of a sudden.
Chase Granada, especially against Betis on the weekend, very impressive. Not just to beat a side like Betis, who have been in and around that upper echelon at the start of the season at times, but 4-1 victory. That came out of nowhere, I think, for most people.
Yeah, it was a stunning win. And, you know, hopefully that's the sort of win that gives them the confidence to sort of push on from there. I mean, they've only had 3 wins all season. But, you know, they're right back in it now. I mean, they're only 3 points behind Depor in 16th. I think, you know, Valencia winning's just pulled them that little bit away. But it's wins like that that give you confidence. And, you know, let's face it, you know, football teams, whether at the top of the league or the bottom, they rely on confidence. And if they can just, you know, get another 1, maybe 2 in the next few games, that really sort of gives them a platform for later on in the season. I think, you know, looking at the table at the moment, you know, Osasuna, 8 points adrift now from fourth bottom. That's them down. I can't see, you know, 1 win all season. They've got to get 3 just to get above the relegation zone. So I think, you know, they're gone. So I think you're looking at 2 from 4. And I'd probably put Leganés down in one of those two because they've not won since November the 21st, I believe. So maybe we're looking at 1 from 3, in fact.
I was going to say, the problem that Granada have, I mentioned a home form, is pretty much where they've won all their games, obviously. But they've played Leganés, Sporting Gijón, Deportivo and Osasuna all away from home in their next, that's between now and the end of the season. So their home games are going to be real tricky. So that's something to keep an eye on for them. If they're going to stay up, they're going to have to perk up their away form quite considerably.
Yeah, and the games against Leganés and Deportivo in early March and early April as well, the pivotal points in a season really for any side. With Granada, with the victory against Las Palmas a few weeks back and then, of course, against Betis this week, I mean, has anything really changed with this side? I didn't get their first victory until November, of course, but Alcaraz has come in and slowly but surely the points have started to come. I mean, they've had some heavy defeats, of course, and when you take on Real Madrid and you're down at the bottom, you expect to get beaten quite badly. I think most people are not too surprised at the hammering they got to start 2017. But in general, there has been a stark change from August, September, October, and then October to now.
Well, I think it's when you've got a team that can beat Sevilla 2-1, for example, but then go and draw 1-1 with Osasuna, I mean, sort of, therein lies the issue. It's a consistency. You know, it's all very well getting yourselves up for those big games. And as I said, you know, the Betis game is another one that really is one of the results of the season for me. But they've got to follow that up. They're away at Athletic Club in the next fixture, but then home to Alaves. I mean, you know, these sort of next 2 or 3 fixtures is where they need to show that they've got the bottle to want to stay up.
You mentioned there, of course, Big Pete, as he is known on the show, Peter Vasilievich. I think that's the best it's going to get as well from me, I'm afraid. the magic's kind of worn off now after a very impressive start coming in January for Osasuna. You just get the feeling that, you know, they've thrown everything they can at it since his arrival and it's not quite been enough. And now, obviously, heads have completely gone, heads down, and Osasuna at the moment stuck, as I say, on 10 points. In the La Liga table do look pretty much done and dusted. What about the Champions League games coming up this week, guys? Sevilla taking on Leicester City. And anybody that's watched Leicester City this season will be a little surprised at just the fall from grace that they've had. They are circling the rim, so to speak, of the relegation battle in the Premier League. It won't get much easier for Sampaoli's side in terms of a Champions League draw, you get the feeling.
I mean, I haven't watched Leicester, I'll be completely honest, but I've spoken to people that have, and for all intents and purposes, from what I understand, they are, if not an accident waiting to happen, you know, they're on the precipice. So, you know, we know how poor their league form has been. There's quite a big likelihood at this stage that they could slip into the bottom three. I think they've got a chance against Sevilla only because, you know, if Sampaoli plays his normal style, a little bit gung-ho, you know, they've got players like Mahrez, Vardy and, you know, one or two others that can take advantage of that. I don't think we're going to see over one leg, you know, it's not going to be done and dusted by the end of the 90 minutes. It's going to go right to the wire of the two legs, I think.
Wow, yeah, I'd agree with that pretty much. I would effectively say that Leicester are a banana skin, really, for Sevilla, because they really haven't got anything to lose, and they're going to come out. The style of the two managers is going to be a really interesting watch, and I do think Sevilla will go through, but I certainly wouldn't write Leicester off.
I would write Leicester off in a heartbeat, and I don't mean that with any disrespect to Leicester City at all, but I have been told that Claudio Ranieri has certainly completely lost that dressing room, and it's a side that plays with zero confidence at the moment. Nothing, you know, last season Vardy and Mahrez could touch the ball and everything would go right. You know, Mahrez was skinning 3-4 people at a time. Vardy, every shot he had pretty much was at least on target. Now the guy can't hit the target to save his life at the moment. It's been a disaster in the last few weeks, almost knocked out of the FA Cup by Derby. The losses continue to rack up in the Premier League. And their last Premier League victory came back in December. It's not been pretty for them. Sevilla, on the other hand, are just brilliant. When they're on song, they're brilliant. But an average Sevilla, from the times when they've been slightly off form, and Sampaoli has been doing his nut on the sideline and getting very agitated with the performances, that will still carve apart this Leicester City side. This, I am saying right now, will be over after the first leg. Completely done and dusted. Whether Leicester scrape one goal or not. As I say, and I mean no disrespect to Leicester City, but I just think, considering the state that club's in at the moment, they're completely out of their depth in the Champions League. Atletico Madrid taking on Bayer Leverkusen coming up as well this week. If one man knows how to G up a side for tournament football, it's Diego Simeone. It's their last chance for silverware this season for Atletico, and perhaps a last chance for Simeone if rumours are to be believed that he is going to be departing and going elsewhere at the end of the season, as many expect, of course, and a last Champions League campaign in the Vicente Calderon as well, and they'll want to finish off the Calderon's history perhaps with lifting the European Cup. Well, I'm sure they'll want to. Leverkusen, a big banana skin for them, though. If you're talking about banana skins, this is a side that could certainly be underestimated.
Yeah, I think both games are going to be very, very tight indeed, maybe settled by the odd goal. I do wonder whether it's going to be Simeone's team selection that will either win or lose him the tie. You know, Kevin Gamero's blown hot and cold this season, but obviously had a fantastic weekend. Does he leave him in, or does he have Torres or Angel Correa there? Does he put Carrasco out on the wing, as he has been doing, but, you know, obviously the player hates playing there? You know, there's all these sort of two or three little things that perhaps could be changed that might just push him over the edge. But I agree with you, banana skin. I'm going to tip Atletico over the two legs, but just by the skin of their teeth.
Carrasco out on the wings. Simeone doesn't seem like the kind of manager, you know, we've spoken about Messi kicking up a fuss, perhaps about having to drop so deep today. Diego Simeone is the kind of guy that Yannick Carrasco, oh, I don't like playing on the wing. I mean, you might as well say that to a brick wall for 8 weeks. It will have the same impact that it will have on actually saying it to Diego Simeone. If he wants somebody to play there, or needs somebody to play there, and needs Carrasco to step in and play there, I mean, he's going to play there.
That's exactly what he said, isn't it? I mean, he's just said he might not like it, but that's where I want him. End of conversation.
Well, Carrasco kicked off when he was taken off against Alaves a few weeks ago, and he kind of kicked off in the dugout and messed a few bottles around. And Simeone turned around and effectively laughed in his face, didn't he? And said, I'm perfectly happy for you to do that, mate. It doesn't mean I'm going to change.
Yeah, get stroppy. Like, that's fine.
Yeah.
Throw the toys out the pram. I can throw plenty of toys when we get into the dressing room.
You think you got toys then?
Yeah. Don't worry about that. I've got an arm on me. What about the debate? Fernando Torres, of course, Gamero coming up with a hat-trick on the weekend. Right time for him to do that in terms of squad selection problems for Simeone. Torres has been in fine form in the last few weeks, though. And does it cause any sort of headache? I mean, will there be an inclination to lead Torres off from the line instead of Gamero to start off with, or perhaps even, dare I say it, start without either of them?
I think the fact they're away from home will dictate that Torres will start that game. I think if Gamero is going to be a super sub, then so be it. I think they'll be perfectly happy with that.
So I wonder if that's been part of the issue that we've seen across the season, though, where we sort of speculated quite a few times on the podcast that Atleti haven't been the same Atleti. I don't know whether one of the issues has been there's been no real consistency in terms of his selection up front. And no one's really been allowed to have that run of... We always talk, don't we, about a player having a run of games to build up their confidence, to find their way into a side. you know, Guimero, when he was at Sevilla, was on fire, but he was obviously playing every week. He's having a couple of games here or there and then back out of the side. So, you know, looking further ahead for the future, maybe he has to put Guimero in and leave Torres as a super sub.
Finally, let's move away quickly from the European Championships, because there's a big midweek game as well coming up in La Liga. And it's on the final little topic that I want to get onto today. Voro and his Valencia side beating Athletic Club on the weekend. Now they take on Real Madrid at the Mestalla. Okay, let's just try and work out if Valencia have got any chance at all. Because one week they'll look disastrous. The next week defensively they'll look near solid as a rock and be playing some fine flowing football going forward. They can sometimes look like they've got an ability to entrench themselves in their own half and defend well, even if it's for their lives at times, and get a result. We see so many shades of this Valencia side under Voro. I guess it just depends on which side is going to come up and crop up against Real Madrid this week. If they can get the right shade, I suppose, cropping up against Real Madrid, do they have a chance against Los Blancos?
If they do, it's a very minimal one. But again, like you've just said there, I think it depends which variation turns up. I mean, I've never been one for believing in bogey grounds, but if you want to throw that into the mix as well, obviously, Real Madrid's 22-match winning run under Carlo Ancelotti was ended at the Mestalla. Rafa Benitez was sacked after the 2-2 draw there last year. You know, Sabelli Zaza scored a goal, Nani scored a goal, Orellana's played out of his skin against Athletic Club. So things, when they come together, they play well. But again, that's been sort of so sporadic this season. They look like they've turned the corner before now, and then it's just, oh, same old Valencia again. So, I mean, they have a chance, but, you know, I can't see anything other than a comfortable Real Madrid victory in this one.
Well, Valencia did cause like a massive scare for Barcelona, didn't they, early in the season? So they have definitely got it in them, but I do agree fundamentally there are kind of 50 shades to this Valencia side, and probably the most likely one that we'll see against Real Madrid is the one that they get a spanking.
Yeah, it's interesting about which Valencia side will kind of show up. They seem to have a run of a couple of decent games and then completely fall apart when you think about the back-to-back victories they got against Espanyol and away at Villarreal. Very impressive, those two, and then completely fell apart against Las Palmas and the comfortable beating that was handed to them by Eibar as well. They've not conceded in their last two games, so it's about time that Voro's defences once again fell apart. They do have a habit of throwing a spanner in the works, though, in terms of title races. I mean, I think we all remember the victory they got at the Nou Camp towards the end of last season, with a 2-1 victory against Barca that suddenly threw the title race wide open once again. It might not be as wide open as that this time around if they do get a result against Real Madrid. Madrid with that 1-point lead, two games in hand, but one of those games being played midweek away at Valencia. Something to get our teeth into next week on the show. And for that, we will leave it today. Thank you very much, Jason and Mark, for coming on. Really appreciate you guys spending the time out to have a chat.
That's no worries, mate.
And we will catch you next week. Remember, Eye on La Liga is available to view and listen to on Audio Boom and iTunes. Just type in Eye on La Liga, give a search. Get on to www.marca.com/en, www.marca.com/en for all of your Spanish football news and views. And of course, at Marca in English, at Marca in English, all lowercase, all one word, on Twitter. Let us know what you want us to talk about next week. Champions League continuing then, big games in La Liga as well in midweek, and then another weekend of action to get our teeth into as well. All that and more next week on the show. Enjoy the football. Have a good one. Good night.